Blog Talk Radio.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sona shene voratfet akuigegen ma'ilma.
Fighting Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. If you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please acknowledge them. They're very, very tough times for everybody in uniform. Tonight, we've got we've got a long list of things here. I want to welcome Dr. Chris and Bob. Ty will be joining us in about 5 minutes. I just got a text. So, Bob, it was a heck of a battle last week. You want to start with that one?
Oh, absolutely. So, Israel Assadina versus Paula Costa, both undefeated, going in there. And I was kind of mixed on both. I thought, Costa really had, that strength and, conditioning and, could really outlast people. And Asanya, very unorthodox, very phenomenal fighter, been really kind of showing himself. And after last week, it just shows that Israel Asanya is on a league, in a league of his own. I mean, he might as well be managed by Tom Hanks. You know what I mean? So so he really outclassed Costa. Costa just kept taking shots. Asanya was all over him. Both, takedowns and the stand-up. The stand-up, his strikes were landing. They were all effective. For the most part, he just completely outclassed the undefeated Costa. So, what a performance. And then going forward on that, that other fighters, Adesanya wants recognition as one of being the all-time greats. He thinks he's got it in him, just kind of like Anderson Silva, when he came out, and then John Jones, and all of them, Ronda Rousey. And so you talk that game, and then if you can prove it and get to the top, well, then that power to you. And Israel really thinks that he's got a chance at that. And then by stating that, like out on Twitter and stuff, a lot of the, John Jones and some other people are attacking him back because he shut Costa up. So now there's talk that you know, Adesanya's like, I'll fight you at any weight. You can't run from me. You know, he thought about going up to the 205 division, but Jones is going up to heavyweight. And Adesanya's like, once I, you know, defend this, I'll go up there. And Dana White's even, you know, flirted with that idea. So there's talk of that in the future, and they'll keep that stuff grinding out. But for now, Adesanya is on top, looking great. And I'm not sure who his next guy is, but I doubt it'll be Jones. You know, Jones is going to try to make a showing at heavyweight. So there'll be some other guys coming up for Israel, and he'll get to put on a show. But fantastic performance.
Hi.
Hey, yeah. How you guys doing, first of all?
Good. How you doing, brother?
Good. Hey, it's good to talk to you, man. It's been a while. Yeah, Israel had a tremendous performance, and kind of like what Bob's saying, he does a lot of barking, but he really intends to back it up, and he tries to. And one thing I like about Israel Adesanya, too, is he was active when he was coming up, and he's been an active champion. He's already calling out Jared Cannonier if Jared Cannonier beats Robert Whittaker. So, and Jared Cannonier would be the number one ranked contender if he were to beat Robert Whittaker. But the good thing about Israel is he wants to clean out his division. He wants the next guy up. He wants to create a legacy. He said cheddar makes it better, obviously, because, you know, if you pay him, then he's obviously going to perform. But this is a guy who wholeheartedly wants to leave a legacy in the sport. And I think that's refreshing. So he's not just fighting for a paycheck.
After the fight, there was there seemed to be a problem with his pecs, and they were testing him for steroid use. Does anybody have anything update on that?
Yeah, that was Israel Adesanya, after they came out that, because again, he put on a phenomenal performance, and so anybody that's, you know, going to challenge him is going to try to, you know, say something, because a lot of the athletes have been called out for PEDs, you know, performance enhancing drugs. So Israel's statement after that was like, what's everyone doing? Look at my titty, you know, so power to him. And he's like, you know, and you can tell his confidence too. He's like, yeah, I'll test. He goes, and I might tell you the results. I might not. Well, that to me tells you that the guy is completely clean. If he's going to play those games, you know, somebody would be dirty, be running and hiding and making excuses already, you know? So, So just cause he had a swelled, pec, yeah, so we'll get to the bottom of that, but I love his you know, his comebacks.
And part of the reason you'll get to the bottom of it is because he went and got an MRI. So
yeah.
You know what I mean? So he went and got an MRI to see what's going on. Again, once you see certain things that are a little, even when a fight first started, I was like, oh my god, looks like it. I said I don't remember his right pec being so flabby. That's what I said to myself. I'm not one of those guys who automatically is like steroids. I'm just kind of, that's just not my thing. You know, I appreciate the athletes and the performances, so I kind of don't get caught up into that. But nonetheless, when I saw that, I said, oh my God, everybody's going to say steroids, whether it is or not. That's what people are going to say, because given that performance, that's what they want to believe too, to a certain extent. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, jumping over to boxing, Ty, Jermall Charlo defeated Sergey Devonchenko. Did you expect that?
I did, and I like Derevchenko. I'm a Derevchenko fan. I was pulling wholeheartedly for him to win the fight, but it went similar to how I expected it to go. I thought Sergey would trouble him and press him and make Charlo dig deep, but I thought Charlo would be in control for the whole fight. That's what I thought. I thought Charlo was pretty much in control for the whole fight. It was a closer fight than a lot of other fights. It was a very competitive fight, but it felt like even when Sergey was making Charlo dig deep and win his rounds, Charlo still seemed like he had control of the fight in general. I was impressed, but I wasn't surprised. The reason why I was impressed is because Sergey is dog tough, and he's a wonderful fighter. Wasn't surprised because Jermall Charlo is good, and he has some athletic gifts that made Sergey kind of not the worst style matchup for him. So I was impressed, but I wasn't surprised. I predicted him to beat Sergey by a competitive decision. So.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I know you like to follow the Charlos. What do you think?
I like both brothers. Last night, Max Kellerman did a show with interviewing Jermeil. Shared some of his fights. He's coming along great at 154, but he obviously can't move up and fight his brother. But his brother's he'll take you out any time during a 10-round or during 12 rounds. You're never safe with him. You may be beating him for 10. He'll knock you out in the last 10 seconds of the – I mean, that guy's got a lot of stamina. He's very strong, the older brother. I mean, not the older one, the bigger brother. He's a tremendous fighter. I'm waiting to see the day when he and Canelo get into it. I finally saw Canelo fight the big Russian, and he knocked him out with no problems. Yeah. Finally, I got a rerun of it. I found a rerun. I watched it last night. He knocked the hell out of that big Russian. I can't believe that big salami, as big as he was, can't Camilla. He's giving all that height away and all that size away. You know, when I think of how he beat up Hopkins, I can't believe that he slipped that far. But Canelo put it on him, making a liar out of me. I was impressed. Boy, I got to take a second look at that guy. I hope the hell he fights more often, stops fighting with his manager. It doesn't look good from the lawsuit end. They were trying to explain the lawsuit. It never makes sense to me when when you're doing all that. Get in there and fight. Stop all that crap. I hate that stuff. But I guess it exists. It's been in boxing forever. It'll be there forever, I guess. But I like the Charlotte brothers. I like both of them. And they put on a good show. And certainly their background is fantastic. You know, how they come up and what they did, you know, growing up together and how they kind of raised each other. They didn't come up from a silver spoon, that's for sure. But they're good fighters. I like both of them. I think they got a tremendous future. One at 154, one at 160. I'd like to see the bigger brother get into some better opponents. I'm gonna see him tested. I don't think his chin's ever been tested. Although he's been hit, and he takes it. He got a good chin, too, I guess.
Guys, we're joined by our technical expert, Zito. Zito, we're talking about the Charlo brothers, and we were talking about Jermeil beating Devonchenko, but then in 12, but then Jermeil stopped Rosario in the eighth and with a knockdown. Can you did you want to talk about that one?
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. First of all, I just want to say hello, guys. How you doing? I'm on the road right now, so it's going to be a little sketchy. The Charlo fights, and I heard Dr. Chris talk a little bit about it, and I agree with him. I was sort of impressed by the bigger Charlo, to be honest. But. Like I was sort of impressed by the bigger Charlo because he put on some boxing skills that he really kind of needed to early in the fight against Devonchenko. And what he did, he outboxed Devonchenko in the early rounds, up until maybe round six. And I never thought I would see that. So I really kind of, because my prediction was that Devonchenko would box circles around Charlo. His tall self, he had come straight ahead. And what Charlo did a good job of was playing. And if you guys know, I'm sorry. I'm a boxing scientist, which means I'm a boxer and I deal with science. I deal with polar opposites, magnetic opposites. So when a tall guy needs to get away from a shorter guy, their lead foot are polar opposites or magnetic opposites, if you get what I'm saying. You know how two magnets get together, and if they're the opposite charges, they immediately repel each other?
Sure.
That is what the lead – that's what taller fighters should automatically do against shorter fighters with shorter reach statures. Sorry, guys. I'm still on the road, so I may have to – but
it's okay.
In reality, what Charlo did, he kept his reach – and he kept his power on the extension. He did a good job of footwork on the guy who I thought was going to, who I thought was going to box footwork circles around him. Dovzhenko is an astute footwork guy, especially to get in, especially against a guy with a jab. Even in the Danny Jacobs fight where they had the same trainer, and everything was kind of screwy to a point.
Mm-hmm.
He did a good job. He did a good job against Golovkin. People could say he's older or whatever. No, I think it was Dovzhenko also. Golovkin, I mean, his jab worked against Canelo. But it didn't really work as effective against Dovzhenko. The power shots of Golovkin kind of kept the fight balanced. Charlo was able to keep Dovzhenko kind of steady, and he buzzed him. I'm not sure if he knocked him down. I'm thinking about the other Charlo. We'll talk about that. But I was really impressed by the boxing skill, the long man boxing skill of Charlo. It kind of reminded me of Tommy Hearns. I hate to say it. But the early parts of that fight reminded me of Tommy Hearns. Now, did y'all talk about the second Charlo fight yet?
No, we're just about to. Go ahead.
Okay, no. I'm going to let y'all lead into it. I'm sorry.
All right. Ty, you want to do that, Charlo versus the Rosario?
Hey,
brother. Well, that fight, just like the again, both fights went exactly like I thought they would go. I thought he would stop Rosario early, but I thought it'd be a little shaky here and there. And I thought Jamal, I love Sergey, but I thought Jamal would beat him over 12. The reason why I thought he would stop Rosario is Rosario, first of all, he's a big junior middleweight. Rosario's been stopped before, and he was stopped by Nathaniel Gallimore, who's a quality fighter. He's a little bit below the level of the guys fighting for the title, but he's a quality operator. He's got some good pop. Gallimore knocked him down three times. And so as good as the boy looked against Julian Williams, I knew that Charlo, with his and I'm not even going to get into the boxing skill, because Charlo was losing leverage. Whether Charlo is typically a more fluid boxer or not, it doesn't matter, because Charlo is not what he once was. As far as his fluid boxing, he's actually regressed, but I don't think he's regressed because he's forgotten how to do it. I think he's regressed because he's fallen in love to a certain extent with his power. And what he is, he's very durable and he's well conditioned. Both brothers are extremely well conditioned. And what he knows how to do is he knows how to find a kill shot. He really knows how to be patient. He'll give up rounds because he has a low output. And he has a tendency to fight a little too wound up. We've all talked about that. He's a little too wound up, which is why he misses more shots than he should. He didn't used to be like that. He used to be much more fluid than his older brother. Now it's reversed. But I knew that as long as Rosario didn't knock him out, and I didn't think Rosario would knock him out, I said what it comes down to is point-blank simplicity. He will take Rosario's punches better than Rosario will take Charlo's punches. That's kind of what happened. Both Charlos, they both have very good power. Not great power, but very good power. And they're both very durable, and they're both extremely mentally strong. They don't give up on themselves no matter how the fight's going. And with that level of mental strength and poise, it makes them very dangerous fighters. It takes good fighters to beat these guys, great fighters.
Now I need to piggyback off of something Ty said. And he said they're both mentally strong and they're well-conditioned. Here is a problem I really seen in both fights for the Charlos. The fight was brought back on both of them. Derevchenko went ahead and late in the fight, he couldn't get taken out. And he brought the fight back. He lost really off an early round. And, Charlo did enough good boxing to even make the in-between rounds look like it was his. So, Derevchenko, he lost kind of the early rounds, getting buzzed and not being able to take control when he should have. But he brought the fight back in the late rounds. Especially from maybe round 7 to 8, he started bringing the fight back to like winning rounds to where it made it closer than I thought it should have been. Now we're going to talk about the second Charlo fight, who I thought was losing. He knocked him down in the first round. He hit him on the top of the head with a shot, buzzed him. It was a proper knockdown call. But then, like 4 rounds later, he's losing the fight. He's clearly losing the fight. Clearly looking for his opportunity to catch that button that he had before. And I'm gonna say this much. I seen something that I didn't think I would see. I saw the older Charlo really kind of make better strides on his boxing skills. And we've been talking about, like, for years that the younger Charlo has been, looking the better boxer, looking to progress as, the better technical boxer. And what I'm saying is his level of competition is not going to go up like the older ones, like the older Charlo. And I need to get their names right, Jamel. I'm sorry, I can't get it right. But really, I'm saying one level of competition go up and his skill level going up. And the other one, he was against a guy who was hittable. And anytime you're hittable against a Charlo, then you're 9 times out of 10, you're not going to win. But I saw a guy who was hittable against a Charlo who brought the fight back. And I've seen that too many times on, I don't want to say both Charlos, to where they couldn't get a guy with, Austin Trout is one guy I'm just going to keep bringing up on both of them.
Right.
Even though the younger one won the fight a little clearer, he still had problems with the guy that was crafty with skill that they couldn't get out of there. And if you can't get a guy out of there, it's going to be well to that tough guy who has more skill than him or has enough skill to make it, them uncomfortable. Because one thing I've seen, you're not going to get them out with one shot. That's not going to work. Both of those guys get hit too darn clean. Both Charlos. They will get hit clean, and they will get hit clean in combinations to a point. And they keep their chin up. Their chin's up. They keep their chin up. Their jaw just gritted, and they're going to fight on. But you can't do that against everybody. So, as I say, woe to the guy who's going to be tough enough to get their shots off on them. I love their skill. I love what they did. They did what they were supposed to do, especially the bigger one. But, I just see holes. Not even holes. Guys bring fights back on you. That's dangerous. That's dangerous because guys, you're going to run to the right guy who's going to bring a fight back on you and he's going to end it. He's going to you're not going to make it to the time limit. Sorry if it's talking so long, but that's what I saw.
Okay. Chris, you get Danny Jacobs versus Rosario tonight. Or Rosado, rather. What's your thoughts on that one?
I like Danny Jacobs. I think he's got it all together. Good boxer, good puncher. Good, he's bigger than the average middleweight. I think when he comes in the ring, he's a solid 172. So he's not fighting as a 160 pounder. Big strong guy. I don't see anybody beating him unless it's one of the top three in the division, top two or three in the division. He's going to win all those fights. He's very good. I don't see many flaws in him. Good defensive fighter, good everything. It's going to take Canelo or somebody of that quality to beat him if he drops back to middleweight. Or one of the bigger Charlos. The bigger Charlo could beat him. So I'd like to see that fight. Go ahead.
Oh no, Dr. Chris, I agree with you to a point, but Danny Jacobs, there's been a few things that's worried me about Danny Jacobs. It's two performances I'm going to bring up. Danny Jacobs has one knockout loss against, I forget his first name,
Dimitri Pirog,
and that fight, Dimitri Pirog, he caught Danny. He caught up to Danny Jacobs. Danny Jacobs was boxing a good fight, but he couldn't get away from what Pirog's good work was doing. And Pirog eventually caught up to him in the right way, and Danny Jacobs, he didn't eat it right. And he got caught bad, and he got put out. Ever since then, Danny Jacobs has displayed a pretty good chin that he really doesn't, been protecting. He really doesn't get caught like that. Worries me about Danny Jacobs is the Saluki fight, if I'm getting the guy's name right, Saluki. And that Saluki fight, Danny Jacobs knocked Saluki down the 12th round, and that solidified him a win to where he was losing that fight. I mean, it was really sort of evenish. He might have been losing. That 12th round knockdown it solidified it. That's what scares me about Danny Jacobs. Which guy is going to show up to a certain extent? You know Danny Jacobs for the big-name fights. He shows up, and he performs pretty well, smart and everything. But I've seen Danny Jacobs get knocked out, and I've seen Danny Jacobs lose a fight until they hit a guy, until they caught a guy right. So if he doesn't catch this guy right, is a guy, does he have the potential to win the fight? I'm not going to underestimate Danny because he's a high-level, credible fighter. But at the same time, I've seen him in different positions. So,
Well, Danny's right. Fighting at 168, and Jamal is at 160, and they're fighting on right now two different networks. So that's not a fight that's going to happen.
Danny's fighting at 168.
Yeah, he moved up to 168. One thing Jamal has said and Jamal has never talked about moving up. Obviously, Jamal is just now stepping up his competition in 160. And one thing I got to correct, that fight is not tonight. Danny Jacobs and Gabriel Rosado was just signed. That fight's still some time away. Tonight we have Zepeda versus Berenchik. Rosado and Jacobs was just signed.
Philly Gabriel Rosado too, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I talked about that last week.
Yes. Hey, Bob. You got a fight tonight. Two females that are combatants. You want to talk about that one?
Yeah, Holly Holmes coming up with Irene Aldana. Now, Holly Holmes, infamous for being the one to take Ronda Rousey down, couldn't defend it. Definitely famous for that. Holly Holmes more of a striker than a stand-up. So very, very good for Fight of the Night, possibly. And this Irene Aldana is coming off Fight of the Night as well. So sounds like she's a banger as well and has some ground capabilities and stuff. So this should be two heavy-swinging females going at it. A lot of emotion, a lot of talent. And I'm excited to watch it.
You know what I worry about with Holly Holmes? Age. Holly Holmes has been a good fighter for so long, but Holly Holmes
She's 38 now. She said retirement's not even on her mind. Look where I'm right. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, she's right.
But the thing is, you know, a fighter could put you in a retirement mode too.
We know that. Yeah.
And that's what I worry about with Holly Holmes. I mean, as good as she is, she got clipped by Amanda Nunes. People say the fight was stopped early. I don't think it was. Holly Holmes has been through, most of her fights have been attrition. They've been fights of attrition. Holly Holmes is not, you know, she's been through 12-round wars.
Right.
So, you get to that age, and we've been talking about that 38 getting to 40, especially for lighter weight fighters.
One of my favorite fighters fights on that card, too, Jermaine Duratami, the Iron Lady. I love her. She she fights Julia Pena. And so both of those fights are very interesting, both of the two female fights. As you know, Holly Holmes and Jermaine Duratami fought for the featherweight title a few years back with a contentious decision. So very interesting with, you know, because what's happening now is Holly Holmes and Jermaine Duratami have both lost to Amanda Nunes. In fact, the only person that Jermaine Duratami has lost to in the UFC is Amanda Nunes. She lost to her early in her career, like her sixth fight or whatever, and then she just lost the title. But she feels she exposed her because Amanda turned it into a boring wrestling match because she was getting hurt on her feet by Jermaine. So,
mm-hmm.
Jermaine Duratami and then Holly Holmes, who's only had one shot at Amanda Nunes, but Holly Holmes had multiple shots at the world title. So what's kind of happened is you have Holly Holmes and Jermaine Duratami really kind of holding up the division in a sense. They are very much capable of picking everyone off, but not necessarily being marketable for a title shot. So if Julia Pena breaks through and if Irene Aldana break through, then you get some fresh faces for Amanda Nunes.
Mm-hmm. Amanda Nunes is, right now she's top dog, and it's kind of hard to match up anybody. That's, you got to make somebody credible, you know, it's getting
right
to that point.
Okay. Hey, Bob,
I want to hear what Bob had to say.
Yeah. Go, Bob.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I was kind of drifting off another way. Ty Z, we were talking last week, and Dr. Chris was talking about the big rush, and I don't know where he's from, but how about Jan Błachowicz taking down I just had it on the tip of my head.
Dominic Reyes, I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it. Because Błachowicz is like such, he's just a humble dude, man. You know what I mean? And I don't have a problem with Dominic Reyes, but Dominic Reyes was coming to defend his title, he felt. Because he should have beat John Jones. And, you know, and I kind of was like, all right, maybe, you know, I thought Reyes should have gotten the decision. But that's all I heard in the next 6 months. I wasn't hearing so much about what he needed to do to take care of Jan Błachowicz. All I was hearing was that he was going to defend his title. And so I thought it was a little bit of a poetic karma. And then, like I said, Jan Błachowicz, he was a journeyman at one point. Like, that was literally one of the feel-good MMA stories of the year for me.
I don't know how long he's going to hold on
to the title at 37 years of age, but I was that was really that was a special moment. I was really happy for him.
And I love the way he fought the fight. That explosive, Reyes, explosive, bang, bang. All he did was keep it tight, walk him down, land what he needed to land. I love the way he fought that fight. He fought it poised. He fought it nice and poised. It seemed like an old head against a young boy.
Oh,
I'm being totally honest. What us old heads do, that's what he did to the young explosive guy. You want to be all over the place, do that. But all he did was he stepped straight. He protected where he needed to protect, and he hit where he needed to hit. I love that. I love the way he executed that fight. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, and phenomenal, just like what I was saying. I don't got nothing against him, Reyes, but, you know, and I thought Reyes could have possibly pulled that decision off John Jones. I mean, that was a really close fight. So I thought Reyes was going to come with a way better performance. And Błachowicz just walked him down, just old school, mm-hmm. just walking down, dong, dong.
Nice and tight.
Nice and tight. Yeah, right. He couldn't run away.
Tight.
He couldn't get away from him, you know?
You know what I really love? Hey, Bob, you know what I really love?
Huh?
Bob, I know you love this. The way he would start with his hands and finish with that kick to the body.
That was beautiful.
What, two kicks, and next thing you know, you see a huge welt. I was like, uh-oh.
On the left side. I think it was the left side because it was right kick.
Yeah, it was left side.
The welt was on, it was on Reyes' right side. What he was doing, he was finishing
it was on the right
with
side?
A left high kick. It was on Reyes' right side. Yeah,
okay.
was finishing it with a left. Brkovich was finishing with the left kick to the ribs. And, man, that was
the left
cool.
kick going to the right side. He was finishing with the left kick?
Yeah, you can't kick the left kick to the left side left behind you unless he turns
it was,
around.
Yeah, okay, it's the right side. All right.
Yeah, it was awesome. Just boom, boom, boom. Took him down.
Good. Another question I had for you was that Eddie Hearn says that Joshua will vacate his WBO title if he fights Usyk. Does anybody want to handle that one?
Well, what he said was, what he's speculating is that potentially, he didn't say he would vacate his WBO title if he fights Usyk. What he's saying is that if the Fury fight comes along, he would vacate the WBO because he'd fight Fury and not the mandatory, which is Usyk. That's what's being said. So if the Fury fight, which obviously is a bigger money fight, if the Fury fight were to be on the table, he would go ahead and vacate the WBO for the Fury fight. But, you know, he's not looking to vacate anything. And then Usyk would fight for the vacated title if he were to beat Derek Chisora. That's what's actually being stated.
He has to beat Derek Chisora.
And Eddie Hearn, you know, Eddie Hearn tested positive for COVID, so he had to leave. The bubble where he was putting the fight as well.
Yeah, yeah. The other question was that we get Terrence Crawford and Kell Brook on November 14th.
They're signed?
On that? I'm sorry?
Yeah, they're signed.
They're
signed.
Yeah,
I think we talked about that, but yeah, they're signed.
Yeah.
I didn't remember they signed.
To bring a little levity
to
the...
I could put my thoughts in on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you want. It's boxing right now. Terrence Crawford, he has to be careful, but Kell Brook is, I think he's past it, especially in welterweight. Kell Brook, he's going to have problems making welterweight. That's as simple as that. I mean, effectively, I think. He hasn't made it ever since Errol Spence. He hasn't made it properly to me. So, you're dealing with Terrence Crawford. If Kell Brook can have all the skill in the world, I just think after a certain moment, he's not going to knock Terrence Crawford out and he's not going to have the stamina left. So maybe around round eight is going to be punishment time.
Well, to add a little levity to tonight's program, I don't know if you saw it or not, but it was flashed that Mayweather would fight Khabib or McGregor for a mere $600 million.
I thought the number I read was $300 million. Actually, I thought it was $300 million that I read for the fight.
Yeah, they bumped it up this morning. It was $600.
uh-huh.
Hey, Bob, there was a fight on Bellator last week, two females. It went 43 seconds of the first round, Cloud versus Kleinholt. Kleinholt's down in 43 seconds. Do you know anything about that one?
No, I didn't get to see that one, but good for her, man. I love watching the female fighters go. Is anybody else got anything about that? But I do got some news about Bellator, though. That Bellator is signing Khabib's cousin. So,
Usman, how about look, what kind of name is that? Usman Nurmagomedov. So he has Khabib's last name, but somehow he has Kamaru Usman's last name too. So
right.
I'm just assuming he's an overwhelming wrestler, but he's not. He can do a bit of it all.
Yeah. So, but that's good. So you'll get some Nurmagomedov. I can't even say it on both Bellator and the UFC.
Nurmagomedov. I could say it if they say it, but.
Yeah.
I'm with Dr.
It'll just
Chris.
Be it'll just be
the Russian guy, the black guy, the white guy, the Mexican guy. You know.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce Nemega it.
Medoff. It's Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov. That's what it is. Nurmagomedov.
Hey Chris, you got Devin Haney versus Yuri Gamboa in November down here in Florida at the casino at the Hollywood. What's your thoughts on that one?
Well, I'm just not a Gamboa fan. I don't know. He's done. In my book, he's done.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy him anymore. I don't enjoy watching him. You know, the thing, you know, I'm glad he's making some money, making a living and all that, but he just doesn't have it anymore. He came up, you know, like a real quick, but he never caught on. He's never, and right now he's over the hill. I'm going to say he's done. I'm not saying he has a miserable day. He should clobber him, you know. But I'm not a Gamboa fan. I don't like his style. I think he's going to. He's going to get beat. I know that. I don't think he has a chance over a long period of time. He's good for 3, 4, 5 rounds, and boom, he drops a hammer on him. So I don't know why the hell he's still fighting.
Well, you know what? He fought Tank, and this is what happened. I've never been a big Gamboa fan either. I mean, he's had some, you know, marvelous physical skills, but I never thought he tightened his boxing game up and really learned that Cuban style to be the best that he could be. However, with that said, the reason why, and I'm always happy for a veteran boxer who gets another shot. The reason why he's getting a shot is because he fought Tank Davis, blew his Achilles out in the second round, and fought a competitive fight through the rest of the fight until they finally pulled him out, like around the 11th or 12th round. So in that performance, he deserved another. He deserved to get another payday. He really did. He showed that if nothing else, he still has dog in him. Now, with that said, just like we talked about a few weeks ago, I told you this was the fight that was, in spite of all the talk about Haney and Gary Russell, what did I say? I said, that's rumors he's going to fight Yuri Ortiz Gamboa. This is a step up for Haney. This will be the best fighter that Haney has fought. With that said, Haney's too big, too young, too athletic. Yuri Ortiz Gamboa is about 7 years and, let me see, 7 years and 2 weight classes removed from his best time. So, nice. Brought in to make Haney, you know, so Haney could get a name on his scalp and say, I beat this guy. But outside of that, he's supposed to beat Yuri Ortiz Gamboa. It's just that Yuri Ortiz Gamboa did significantly better than was expected against Tank Davis, which allowed him to get this shot. That's all.
I agree to a certain extent. I agree that Gamboa, his performance off of Tank Davis somewhat gives him a shot at Devin Haney. I mean, I'm be honest. Devin Haney, he's up and coming, but
don't,
he's still
no,
not.
Don't misconstrue what I said. I didn't say it gives him a shot at Devin Haney. You misconstrued what I said.
it gives him a
shot at another payday. Nothing to do with Devin
True
Haney.
True enough.
Business.
True enough.
We're talking business. Because he performed
true
his
enough,
show,
true enough. Devin
the
Haney,
guy who's supposed to wipe out, he gets an opportunity at another payday. Devin Haney's going to get his ass whooped. It's the payday he gets now.
Well, here's what I'm saying. With Gamboa, we can talk everything about his last performance. It's never, ever about that dude's last performance. How old is Gamboa? Gamboa's he's in his late 30s, at least.
Yeah. I was
Gamboa's
gonna say
38, 39. Yeah. Thirty guy. Gamboa's light. to be 38, he's light. Mm-hmm. And we've seen Gamboa lose to lesser gods. He put a good performance up against Tank, but Lord of Mercy, he's lost and been scratched out by guys who weren't even Tank's level. I don't care how he really performs against Haney. I'm glad he gets a payday, but when you're talking about this, Haney's going to move forward. Gamboa's really kind of not. I mean, his name's going to make him money, but in the boxing game, Gamboa might get punished off of his name. Gamboa's a dude, he's not going to – I always like the style. I like the style because he did have that Cuban style, and he was flashy with it. I like that part of it. Gamboa's his promotional career is what killed him. He could have been a much better fighter.
Wasn't
he? If he
him
kept...
and Billy Gibb, didn't they sign with 50 Cent? Wasn't that the biggest?
Nah, my
because we were
God,
remember 50
say,
Cent came in
as
me and Billy Gibb, and it was the moment they signed with 50 Cent, they were losing and inactive. It was horrible.
That's the thing I'm saying. Gamboa was like 3-4 years inactive in the prime of his career. In the prime of his career.
When he came back, at a heavy weight, weight. From that point on, he's never been back at 126, which was his best weight.
Exactly. So that's my point with Gamboa. How long is Gamboa going to last? Especially when you're keeping him up against top competition. He just fought Tank Davis. You talk about now. Okay, all right, but I'm gonna go to Dr. Chris. Dr. Chris, you know how you say those older guys, they had that one more good performance in them? That was Gamboa's to me. He didn't get knocked clean out against Tank Davis. Styles, whatever you want to say. Gamboa's an older fighter. So his style, he was a athletic fighter. He wasn't the most skillful technical fighter. He was very athletic. He's gotten more skill and craft as he's going on, but he shouldn't be even competing against Tank. He was brought in there to get smashed out by Tank.
You know, one thing you just said that made sense was Styles. And one thing we know about Tank is as hard as Tank hits, Tank has leaden feet. And Haney doesn't. Haney's bigger than Tank. He's bigger, longer. He doesn't hit as hard, but he's bigger, longer, quicker, more athletic. And so that's the one who could
athleticism
punish. Yeah, that's the one who could really. I mean, Haney doesn't hit as hard, but that's the one who's capable of potentially punishing Gamboa. He can get there. Where Tank, when he gets there, he's going to hurt you. But Tank can't get there quite as easy as quite as quickly as Haney.
Haney's my point. My whole point is this: it's going to come a guy that's going to go ahead and hurt Gamboa. He's going to go ahead and lay mitts on him enough to – he may think about retirement. He may not. I'm not questioning the guy's toughness. I'm just questioning his durability with age. I've seen him lose to lesser guys in a worse way than Tank and Haney. So –
Well, you know, boxing is the ultimate what have you done lately for me sport. You know what I mean? He did better than expected, so he earns, another chance to make a payday.
Absolutely.
That's why, unfortunately, in boxing, a guy who loses sometimes gets written off. It's because he lost, you know? That is the issue with the sport that we love. Part of the reason why the best don't fight the best sometimes is from a marketing standpoint, they get written off if they lose. It's the ultimate what have you done lately for me sport, unfortunately.
I'm going to go into all fighting. Even MMA, dealing with the UFC, you catch four or five losses in a row, especially if they bad. See if you're fighting in another league.
Well, if you catch UFC, typically if you catch four or five losses in a row, you get cut. And you could go to Bellator or one or
another league.
But
another
league. With the UFC, because it's a monopoly, they can do things a little different. But for instance, in the UFC, Jan Blachowicz just became the world champion. That rarely happens in boxing unless a champion a lot of times is saying, hey, I'll fight this journeyman. Why? Well, because, you know what, it's a payday. It's a mandatory defense. You know what I mean?
The mandatory. That's the mandatory.
A guy like – can I finish right quick? See? A guy like Lahovich who can hang around and then get on a hot streak, he gets on a hot streak by fighting the best competition. That doesn't happen in boxing.
All right, well, nah, in the UFC, I mean, nah, it does. Somebody just fought the mandatory in boxing. That normally doesn't happen, but somebody just did. But
well, the
I mean,
IBF enforces their mandatory. That's the one thing about the IBF that's good and bad, because sometimes they'll enforce their mandatory where there's a chance for an undisputed champion, but they're really strict about enforcing their mandatory. The IBF is.
All right, but now we think about the mandatories in UFC compared to boxing. The UFCs and the mandatories in UFCs usually are the top guys.
Not really a mandatory in UFC because UFC controls everything. So, like, for instance,
monopoly,
so,
exactly.
Like,
they call
like
it that.
Dana White, and that's what I'm saying, it's a monopoly. So, like, for instance, Israel Adesanya, his next opponent should be, if Jared Cannonier wins, would be Jared Cannonier. However, he could stop and say, well, you know what, Chris Weidman's a bigger name. We'll make that fight. So there's no such thing as mandatory in UFC because it's a monopoly. But with all the sanctioning bodies, you have a mandatory. If you don't defend it, they take your title. Completely, and that's why I said when,
that's the one
when people
belt.
Compare
that's the one
boxing
belt, then.
To UFC, when people compare boxing to UFC, it's like it's really apples to oranges. It really is. Boxing
well,
MMA
yeah.
is apples to oranges.
Okay. Hey, Chris, another one I want to ask you about was Julio Chavez Jr. Got his bell rung in six last week. Did you have to see that one?
I didn't see it, but I think he should quit boxing. He doesn't have it anymore. He doesn't have it anymore. What the hell is he in there for? He's an embarrassment. You don't know who's going to show up. If I were a promoter, I wouldn't take a chance on him. I wouldn't even sign him. I mean, he's got a past name, but that's it. You know. But he's done. I don't think he should fight anymore, really.
Well... I mean, if you can make money, then that's his. I mean, just according to what we've been talking about lately, if he can make money, then that's what he should do, regardless.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're gonna pay for that money. There's been times when guys made mistakes.
That's an unfortunate issue I've been trying to talk about. That's an unfortunate issue I've talked about. Yeah, for real. I mean, guys only have certain avenues to make money. It's a shame. I don't like that aspect, but
it's not enough when that's the only reason you're fighting. You know, just to tail end your career.
Exactly, and there's no pension plan. That my thing is, there's no pension plan. There's no health insurance that goes along with it. And with boxing, we deal with fighting sports. There's nobody advocating for that strong enough. That's I just see fighters just suffer all the damn time. You hear these stories, and now we're going to start hearing the long-term stories that we heard from boxing from the 20s and 30s. We're going to start hearing that from the 90s. And the 2000 from the UFC fighters. We're going to start hearing that. And that's the sad part about it.
Well, guys, we're up against our time limit here. I want to thank all of you for joining. Chris, it's always great to talk with you again. Bob, you got a great insight into UFC and MMA, and it's really helped our listening audience. Ty and Zito, being the experts that you are on boxing and UFC and MMA, I really appreciate everything you guys do for the program. We're gonna be heading out here. So, Z, you want to lead us out?
Absolutely. I'm sorry for coming on late. I'm just getting back. Another good show. I want to thank Bob. Ty, you Butch, Dr. Chris, all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely dedicated in memory of Bob and Coach Mel. Anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
Hey, it was nice to get the gang back together again. It's been a while since we've all been on. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel is watching over us. Everybody enjoy their week.
Okay, Bob?
Yeah, man, I just love having the whole crew on. Love everyone getting excited. Ty, it's a pleasure talking to you. Dr. Chris for color commentary. I friggin' love it. It's amazing. Frank, thanks for putting everything together. And God bless everybody out there on Fighting Words Family. Talk to you next week.
Okay, Chris?
I enjoy the show, and I enjoy listening to you guys. I can't keep up as keep my memory up. I see these fighters fight on the quadrangle, and I can't remember their names, but they put some hell of a fights on. And I think of Bob all the time. And then I say, I'm going to remember this one and bring it up. Then, damn it, I forget. That's age, guys. It's going to happen to all of you. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks, Lex.
Good seeing you guys. Good talking to you guys again.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women police and fire services, and all those help people out there helping with COVID-19. Please wear your mask when you're out. Please wear gloves when possible. Please keep yourself healthy. You're our most important product. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Richard Fielder, San Diego Officer Mike Kendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longbrook Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wimbledon Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA, Highway Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Jermaine, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bunn, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Arthur Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Boward, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Island County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department, Officer Bob McKetchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department, and Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night and God bless.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yilama.
Yeah.
fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the field.
Advised 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.